You're listening to No Plot, Only Lore, a podcast about games and the tables we play them at. Your DMs tonight and every night are Josh and Chris. You can find us on all podcast platforms or check us out at noplotonlylore.com. If you like what you hear today, please rate and review the show and share it with everyone you've ever met.
All right, so I'm going to forgo the big crazy introductions and I'm just going to jump right into it. I had to plan a whole ass new campaign for last week, and I thought that would be a good jumping off point for us to talk about, like, how we plan for sessions, how we plan for new campaigns, what we have to put together, the materials that we have going into a new game, and kind of wanted to get your input on some of that.
Definitely, yeah. So if we're starting from the start, then, you know, while it's still fresh in our minds, let's discuss how we start, because, you know, we've both restarted things multiple times over the course of even just the last couple of years. So,
so many times, yeah. All right, so first off, I guess, like, what is your general philosophy when it comes to, like, planning a session of Dungeons & Dragons?
If we're talking about planning a session, then for myself, the first thing I want to do is review, let me step back for a second. When I start a campaign, I'm a person who tends to put down just a rough skeleton of the overall story arc that I would like to explore, and some sort of my main storytelling highlights I'd like to hit over the course of the campaign. Just some generalized ideas. Obviously, you know, we work from a lot of tropes, and so we just need sometimes to refresh ourselves of what ones we've used before and what we'd like to avoid in the future. So making some notes like that, but also what positive tropes would I like to maybe implement that I've discovered since the last campaign. So the first thing I'll do for just a general session is compare what has happened in the last session from my notes with where we're at in my rough outline of the story arc, and then look at, you know, based on where we are, okay, well, where do I want to go over the next couple of sessions, and how is this particular session going to work in service of moving towards that goal? You know, maybe I've got a certain particular character that I want them to interact with for story purposes, to, you know, be given some direction, or I've got some sort of interesting narrative twist that I want to dump on them that's been sort of built up. I want to make sure that they're moving in the direction to be able to explore those things. So, you know, I'll come up with a couple of rough ideas. Obviously, everything hits the fan as soon as people start actually talking, but, you know, I start with where am I trying to get my party to in the story over the next couple of sessions, and figure out where this one is going to, let's say, start.
We're already fighting. So my approach is very, like, bottom up, I guess. So, like, instead of, like, looking at the overall and, like, putting together a small sketch of what it is that I want to do, or, like, the types of situations that we're going to be looking at, I start with, like, characters first, right? So instead of worrying about, like, what my player characters are going to be doing, necessarily, like, coming up with a plot. Like, it's the name of the podcast, No Plot, Only Lore, right? So, like, instead of throwing down with, like, a lot of, like, plot points that I want to hit or any of that, I start with, like, key NPCs, people that these people are going to be running into early on. And I flesh them out as much as I think I can get away with in the time constraints that I have. Like, I spend a lot of time noodling on characters and their motivations and why they want to do what they're doing, to the point where, like, before my first session of this campaign, I already had, like, dossier pages written up for, like, secret agents that player characters weren't going to meet for, like, a session or two. And then from there, I start to figure out, like, where those characters are, what it is that they're trying to do, and how the player characters are going to come into contact with that, and how they're going to come into conflict with that occasionally. So rather than, like, have a very, like, top-down overview of what's going on, I try and, like, establish as much of the world as possible before I move into some of those plot points, I guess.
Well, I wouldn't say we are necessarily in conflict just yet. I think, you know, like you said about building the world around them.
How dare you plot things on this podcast, sir?
Like you said about the idea of building from the character development side first. I mean, when I'm planning out an overall campaign, I mean, for me, a campaign is a series of smaller quests, for lack of a better term. And within those quests, you know, the quest giver has a particular objective that they need accomplished. And sometimes the quest giver happens to be the player characters themselves. They've decided that this is what they need to accomplish for whatever reason they came up with. And sometimes the quest giver is me. I just want these characters to maybe explore something about their backstory that they haven't really delved into yet. But I think where you and I differ is that I think I value the consistency, or like the, okay, I'm going to use this phrasing, but I'm not married to it. I'm just trying to get this thought out. I value the consistency and richness of the world more than any individual character in it. So I want the world to be, you know, defined on its own terms and very clear and consistent. And then you are just another cog, for lack of a better term. Like, you know, these parties aren't, especially the levels we're playing at, they are not big movers and shapers in the world. So what the world is doing is more important than them. But that being said, they still have the ability to, you know, like throwing a wrench in the machinery, really get some of these cogs out of alignment.
See, I think part of my approach to it is that, like, I'm also, like, I'm not just looking at the individual non-player characters and what they want. I'm also looking at, like, organizations and what they're doing and, like, what the movers and shakers have planned, which isn't necessarily going to interact with the things that happen over the course of the game. They may influence and they may happen in the background, but, like, having an idea of what those characters are doing and how they're moving is really important to me for, like, establishing that consistency in the world, right? So, like, if we have an organization that shows up in the first session and they're acting in a particular way, if they act in a very different way three sessions later, I want to understand why that change happened.
Gotcha.
Right? And I want to understand, like, what is the core motivation that connects both of those behaviors so that the next time we meet them, it's still going to be consistent with the goals of that organization and the goals of the individuals within that organization.
I see. Right? Yeah.
So, like, rather than come up with, like, plot points, I guess, it's, for me, a lot more about, like, what does this kingdom's nobility want versus this kingdom's nobility, if we're going to go, like, high level. If we're going to go for, like, mid-level stuff, what does this dragon and their cult aim to accomplish versus, like, the small town that's in their territory, right? And it's not necessarily the settings of those things as much as, like, the characters that are behind those settings that are making things happen, right? So understanding that is, like, the first thing that I have to try and sort out in my head before I start planning anything.
I see what you're saying. Like, yeah, my tendency is to my a lot of the way I approach generating my own content or putting together my own campaigns is frankly influenced by my significant amount of time playing MMOs and seeing the way they handle storytelling for significant groups of people within a larger setting that they really can't, like, permanently influence.
Well, and I think that we've established early on that you don't really do a lot of, like, custom content stuff. Like, you're utilizing a lot more, like, modules and,
well,
like, pre-built campaigns and that sort of thing. Like, is that
so? There's a couple things that I do. Early on, I was strictly running pre-cons because I just did not have the time to come up with individual stuff. And then what I started doing was reskinning pre-cons to use dungeons and like scenes from them in the service of a slightly different story. And then I started knitting those precons together so that they would chain into each other, regardless of whether they were connected, you know, inherently. And now I find myself doing a mix of unique content within an established setting. So, like, I ran a Dark Sun campaign that was my own story, but very strictly Dark Sun set. And then there's, you know, then just sometimes, like, hey, there's a big cool book came out. I'm just going to, like, run the thing that they made in the book sometimes. Mm-hmm. Right?
And I guess my history was always a lot more, like, seat of my pants stuff. Like, there was a lot more improv that was happening even in, like, the early days of my DMing. So, for me, I don't have that background of, like, setting and, like, module, like, design to fall back on as much as I have, like, my improv skills. And the way that I make stuff up off the top of my head that has to be consistent throughout, and like the reminders that I use for myself through those things. So I think that, like, because I have run a couple of pre-built campaigns and stuff, and I can't help myself but improvise on top of them, like, a lot, to the point that they're basically unrecognizable by the end of it, to be honest. My Ravenloft is a nightmare.
Yeah, there are no vampires, actually, so...
There's one, but he's busy. He's got other shit that he's doing.
And, you know, to that point, like, I mean, my background for a long time was in theater and improv, but I have found that the best improvisation needs structure. You need some sort of boundaries to improvise within. Otherwise, you find yourself lacking traction to move forward. You know, when you've got too many options, then you wind up picking none of them. So having, and the other part of it too comes from, I think, my background in writing comedy sketches and things like that, where subversion of expectation is a huge component of my improvisation and comedy style, and also in how I approach situations as a DM. You know, I think it's important that you start with what's known and established for these people, and then
set up.
Yeah, exactly. And then you hit them with the punchline of something that is, you know, outside of the ordinary. So, like, where you were running an entirety of Fantasy Australia, I might have just had, like, the Bogan orcs, and that's it, for no reason, right? Like, because people haven't, you know, you read about it, you don't hear an orc talk as you read about their lore. But then if suddenly my NPC has this thick Australian hillbilly accent, like, that's that's something you weren't expecting, but everything else about the orcs is the same.
Not okay.
The accent
I had for those orcs was just not okay. Like, it wasn't even Australian.
It just wanders all over.
There were some click sounds involved, and I am not very good at making click sounds.
It was
fucking brutal. But yeah, no, and I get that. I get that, like, narrowing your focus down to, like, the essentials for what you're going to be handling right now makes a lot of sense. And, like, the setup absolutely makes sense as well. I guess, like, the structure of my games doesn't have as much of, like, a 1-2 on it. A lot of it is, like, There was a phrase that I really liked. I think it was Key and Peele that were talking about, like, when you're setting these things up, when you're writing these things, it should be, this happened because of, right? And because of this, that. And
that's
of my planning and a lot of the way that I end up writing. So, like, once I have that starting point, once I have all of the bases covered and I have my, like, established characters and the movers and the shakers, everything that comes off of that is because of that, this.
Right. Right. So. You've got your because established, and then you're just kind of like, and then. But it's still linked back to that initial because.
Yeah. And it's always because. Like, you can never... Like, you don't want to have, then this happens. It's always, because this happens, this happens. And because that happens, this happens. Right.
Yeah, going definitely.
On, down along the line.
So, yeah. So that kind of, you know, goes over our overall campaign philosophy. But let's dive a little more into the preparation for Monday night or whatever it is specifically. You know, what's the basic stuff that we're doing every time we get ready for a night that sets us up for success and sets our players up for having a good time with lots of interesting choices?
All right, so let's start with your methodology for that, because I feel like that's pretty approachable for a lot of people, where you're like,
okay,
you're setting up your scenes, you've got ideas of what you want to hit, you've got like these plot points that you're aiming at. Where do you start on that? What do you plan first when you're sitting down to plan Monday night?
All right, the first thing I am planning is, where are my characters walking in the next 5 minutes? So, depending on what we have... So, you know, obviously you're going to be stopping the night at various points in the story or various situations. So I always want to handle the first thing that's going to happen that night and have that pretty solidly nailed down in my mind. Because, you know, improv is improv. I can deal with that later. But I need to, like you said, because of, I need to have that initial, okay, we've woken up in, we're still in the dungeon, we've only had a short rest, we just finished killing four rooms full of goblins, and one of them escaped to alert the boss, so he's probably on his way right now. What is the next thing that my characters are walking into within the first 5 minutes of waking up, or something like that, right? So I want to have that, you know, like we talked about before, not necessarily on rails, but like just very firmly established the reality of the on-ground situation for the party, and then start working from there. So whether it's jumping straight into combat or some sort of talking situation, or they just need to spend 10 minutes in the inn figuring out where they're going.
So I usually like to start similarly to that. Like when I'm planning my scenes, kind of the first thing that I look at is the hooks that I have available to me, based on the situation that the characters find themselves in. So thinking less about like the direction of the next 5 minutes, it's more like, what are the options that I have for directions my players could go in the next 5 minutes? And I usually end up like mind mapping a lot of stuff to try and figure out like what are all of the various permutations. Like if we're running a dungeon, then obviously you've got like left, right, forward. But when you're dealing with more like urban scenarios or wilderness scenarios, there are a lot of possible options for how that can go. And one of the things that I like to do at the beginning of a session is just start with a hook, right?
Like,
it's the middle of the night, you wake up and there's a spider on top of your chest. What do you do?
Right.
Like, rather than, the whole idea of, like, spending 10 minutes in a tavern talking hurts my soul.
Sure.
And, there's a time and a place for it if you're going to be developing characters and stuff, but, like, the entire idea of, like, spending 10 minutes shopping, God, the idea
right.
of shopping
yeah, yeah, yeah.
RPG just drives me fucking nuts. what a waste of time. So like coming up with those hooks and having those hooks available and ready to go so that like whatever player happens to stumble into one, I have that ready.
That's interesting, because something I picked up from a buddy of mine, but the idea of setting the hook before everyone leaves the previous night,
a cliffhanger,
a cliffhanger, and also just establishing the general like momentum of the party. Like, okay, what is your plan for next week? Or for next session? Like, where are you guys continuing down? Obviously, like, yeah, if you're in the dungeon, you just keep punching your way through the dungeon. But like, hey, do we have a rough idea of which of the hooks I've already set that you were going to explore next week or blah, 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 so that I can kind of jump straight into the action, right? Yeah, like you said, like you don't want to spend 10 minutes sitting around the tavern being like, gosh, should we go check out this MacGuffin over here, or should we chase the red herring down the street? Like,
roll to see if I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
Just, the, yeah, like the...
The less time your party spends freestyle RPing, the better.
I mean, yeah, like, there is a time and a place for, again, the...
Sure.
Spending a lot of time talking amongst one another.
Yeah.
Having those hooks, getting right into the action, having, like, your first scene established, can make getting into the game and getting everybody back into that shared imagined space so much faster.
I find myself fighting the inertia of the downtime is the biggest thing. Like, not every group is meeting every week. You know, sometimes you're going, like, a month, multiple months between sessions. So, like, there's just a fair amount of just, like, trying to get people reined in. And so having that, that quick, you know, burst of nitrous out the door really helps set things on the rails. And then, you know, obviously people are going
to... You've played in my games, and some of my players that you have played with have been, like, very loud and off-topic on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah. That's me.
But, yeah, it's all you. Everybody else was just quiet as mice, and you were just yammering for hours. No, but, like, that moment, I don't know if you remember that I usually start with a clap.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like almost every time we start a session, I start with a clap and then immediately I spit a hook.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's how I start all of my sessions, and having those hooks ready is so vitally important to getting that momentum right away of just like, cool, clap happened. That's our Pavlovian indicator that the session has begun. Christopher is yelling at us now about the things that are happening. Right.
Is that why I started drooling every time?
Yeah. Just like, The times when your character sheet was just, like, half covered in water and everything was smeared.
Man. You had me well trained.
Yeah, it was good.
Okay, no, so let's yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Once we have those hooks, though, right, like, what once you know where your characters are going to be going, or you have a general idea of the directions your characters could be going, how do you end up mapping out what you intend to have happen over a session?
Okay, well, let's pause for 1 second because we are getting into the idea of, okay, now is my time to be creative. And so let's talk for a second about establishing what you need for a good space to be creative. So we made a couple of notes here regarding the really, really basic stuff before you start really any creative exercise, whether it's writing or preparing for a session of D&D, or, you know, you just want to, have time to ponder your deeper thoughts in preparation for some sort of essay or something. Like, you know, you just need to...
The prep for the prep.
Yeah, prep for the prep. So, like I said, number one, let's talk about, you know, equipment and what you need in your space that you're going to be creative in. So, books, writing utensils, you know, I don't know about you. When it comes to the game, I am very much about more old school physical elements. But when it comes to my creative time, I vastly prefer digital.
I go exactly the opposite.
Oh, really? Exactly. That's interesting.
For my planning, for my creativity, for like getting things out and like starting to ruminate on what it is that I'm going to be planning, that prep for the prep phase.
Yep.
I need to be like in a snuggly blankie with like a pad of graph paper on a lap desk with like some music playing so that I can just mind map it out.
Gotcha.
Like, I want to have a pencil in my hand because that like physical connection to the creativity is so important for me. Right, like there's a detachment that happens in the digital that I have difficulty overcoming. So like in early planning stages, until I get that inertia of planning and I'm like starting to tap out like exacting details, it's always going to be pencil and paper.
That's interesting. Yeah, so for myself, I mean, I don't need cozy necessarily. I actually prefer like a very structured, upright sitting position in a good chair, like all the classic posture things they talk to you about. But then again, I do want to have the physical books as my reference. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I just prefer to have them like open and around me. But I am going to be typing and just spitting my thoughts out on a keyboard because I can type so much faster than I can write. And it keeps up with my thought process. It's because there is a lot of just like brainstorm word salad stuff that comes out for a while. Mm-hmm. And then I can go back and edit those thoughts quickly on the document. Also music, but I over time I've realized that there's only two kinds of music that work well for me creatively, either like no words at all EDM bassy stuff, or like too emotional like metalcore kind of.
I don't like, know if I can properly overstate how important Coheed and Cambria is to my creative process.
For me, it's Norma Jean, because I find myself inspired by his lyric writing. So it's, even if they're completely unrelated, just being around that level of creativity that I appreciate helps a ton, even if it's indecipherable for most people.
The heroic vibes that come from any Coheed album, just like washing over me. It's just like, yeah, this is the mood that I need to be in to make a heroic game. Let's go.
Yeah, they only make two types of songs, either like heroic battle anthem or love song. Yep. Like that's it.
Yep. Yeah, both of them only crescendo.
Yeah.
No.
So
chill jams to study to. That's the other one.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Lo-fi hip hop beats to whatever.
Yeah.
So the other part of it is not just what you're physically working in your medium, but your environment around you. You've mentioned before like a coziness and a blanket and stuff like that. I, again, prefer a more, what is the word for it?
Tea is soothing. You wish to be tense.
Well, I don't wish to be tense. I wish to be alert. And and comfort is the enemy of alertness. So
see, I need to slow it down.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Right. So for you, you need to be able to keep up with all of your ideas.
Yes.
Like throw down with those. For me, slowing it down helps whittle down that process.
Gotcha. Right?
I'm keeping the stuff that's important, and like I have that physical connection to like I am writing a thing down. And it is slower than it would be typing, for sure. But that process is connecting me to the creative process, and then I can just like draw a little line and come up with another little circle space in my mind map or whatever it is that I'm doing for that planning. I have to slow it down because otherwise it just turns into word salad.
Right? Gotcha. And
I am not the type of person who edits good. I get it out in the first draft.
I see.
When I can. And so I have to slow it down and I have to be able to like deliberate on what it is that I'm doing while I'm doing it.
Okay.
Or it just ends up being a total mess.
Yeah. For me, it's about mentally putting myself in the... So you talk about like slowing down and being creative. My approach to creativity is workmanlike. I have a job to do. I need to mentally put myself in the work, you know, headspace of it's time to because focus is a very difficult thing for me. So, you know, you talk about removing distractions and things like that. So for me, a lot of that is priming that pump in a setting that does keep me slightly uncomfortable. Maybe it's a little colder than normal. Maybe the lights are a little brighter than other people would want, but like I need sort of that like borderline hospital vibe to be like, this is not time for fun. I have things to do. There will be fun had, but like it's not a fun exercise.
So both of my parents are paramedics.
Yeah.
And I did a weird amount of homework in hospitals.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Like my parents weren't in hospitals. Nobody in my family was sick or anything. But like whenever I had to do homework while I was waiting for my dad or whatever, it would just be like hospital environment, sitting there like at a table in the cafeteria, like writing in my homework.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that environment actually does work for me.
Yeah.
Because it's nostalgic.
Yeah. For completely different reasons.
Yeah, completely different reasons. Now, for focus, I think, like, the big thing that helps me stay on task for, like, it isn't an environmental thing.
Okay.
It's a goals thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever I go to sit down to plan anything.
Sure.
I set a goal for the plan.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily like a goal for what I'm going to have planned or whatever. It's just like, I am going to sit down, I'm going to come up with 3 interesting characters.
I see.
I'm going to sit down, I'm going to come up with like a mind map for, or like a flow sheet for 2 or 3 different directions that this campaign could go.
Right? Okay.
I'm going to have those options forking and ready to throw down. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to doodle a map for this one combat.
I see. Yeah.
Right. And so having that goal keeps me on task because that's when I know I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely agree with the task oriented approach to things. I set maybe 2 or 3 main goals for myself in an evening. And then from there, you know, that's when I might even break that down into like a couple of goals per goal, you know?
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply that I'd like make 3 characters and that was my whole planning for
the game. Yeah.
It's usually got like a couple of different elements attached to it, but
yeah.
Just like, again, focus for the both of us is a difficult thing, and I can't think of anything that is more horrifying than the idea of spending 3 hours statting out creatures
for a thing. Yeah.
So having an end goal, having like rules and borders in an end zone for how I'm going to do this thing is so important for staying on task.
For sure. Okay, so yeah, we've established how we get ourselves prepped at the start of the day or start of the evening or whatever it is to be productive in what we're accomplishing now. So we then have now established sort of our scenes, if you will, I think, or
the hooks. We got some hooks.
Our objectives for the evening.
Yeah. And, like, I think scene work, like, for me, scene work is all about those flow sheets.
Yeah.
But, like, a dungeon is just a flow sheet with extra steps.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, coming up with the various scenes that you're going to have in any given adventure, I kind of construct those the same way that I would a room in a dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, it has to have a purpose. The scene has to exist for a reason for me.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some sort of challenge that's happening there. If a scene isn't challenging, if it doesn't advance the plot or the characters or, like, something else in the story, then it probably doesn't need to have the focus of being an entire scene.
Right.
You know, and coming up with those challenges, like, it's not necessarily always going to be like a 7x7 square room that has like a puzzle in the center of it.
But right.
Like, this is the parlor where somebody is going to provide you with quest information.
Right.
So coming up with like the social challenge that you're going to have for that, the roles that you may need, the like DCs that might happen in here. If you're doing a skill challenge, because I stole skill challenges from 4th edition and so should
like
everyone else.
Everyone should, yes.
Right, if you're going to have a skill challenge, then that's where you set that up, right? And so those, like setting up those scenes the same way that you would a dungeon, I think is a very valuable tool for being able to get from place to place in your story.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Then you also have the option of like branching off from different places, right? So in the same way that a dungeon does, when you walk into a like 15x15 room and it has 3 doors, right? You have 3 different places that you can go with 3 different options. You can do the same thing with a flow sheet.
Yep.
Right? You have this scene and there are 3 different directions that that scene can go. And then there are other scenes that branch off of that. And some of the scenes will branch back to each other, right? And you create like a little maze out of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can color code it and hang it on your wall. Beautiful art.
Sure.
Yeah. So like what when you're planning a scene.
Yep.
What are the important elements of that scene for you?
Great question.
I guess the most important, because like everything's important, but the most important element.
For myself, the most important element in... Okay, let's break it up into two things. Because we've got, like, combat scenes and non-combat scenes, right?
Okay.
So, for a combat scene, for me, the most important thing is making sure if it's a scene I've created that it does something interesting. And then if it's a scene that I'm pulling from pre-generated content, that I understand the intent of the elements of the scene. Like, why did they choose these particular NPCs to fight, and how are they intended to work together, you know?
That's always so fun when you go back through, like, the classic
adventures. Yeah.
And it's just like, there was no rhyme or reason. It was just like, here's a room where the fireballs get shot at you all day.
Yeah, they're just like, this is the room we made to kill you for fun. You're like, oh, right,
yeah.
Neato burrito, I guess.
Here's a very specific puzzle that relies on you knowing an in-joke that we made in 1967. Yeah.
Are you familiar with the entire Gunsmoke catalog? Because that's really going to impact you.
How's your Louis L'Amour knowledge?
Yeah.
We stole this from a Western.
And then, so that's combat. If we're talking about non-combat scenes, then for me, it's a matter of understanding the primary NPCs in that scene, why they're there, what their motivations are, and I guess prepping myself, and shamefully this is something that I do just in real life, but prepping myself for potential conversations with the characters that I know are there, and their reactions are sort of known to me. So how is this NPC going to handle that same potential
You need to account for gremlin energy.
Like, yeah.
I feel like we're trying to get to the, like, trying to get around a little bit, like, the idea of, like, trying to categorize players and, like, guess what the players are going to do. But, like, let's be honest, there's always a murder hobo.
Yep.
And you have to account for the murder hobo walking into a social scene and being like, I'm going to kill the Dowager Princess.
Yep.
Because that's what they do sometimes, and you need to have plans for how people are going to handle that in a real-life non-combat situation.
Sure.
So, man, the best... I don't even know if this is going to make it into the podcast, but the best example that I've seen of that recently was there was a guy who was getting sentenced for a thing, and he had, like, a rap sheet a mile long, and the judge said that she couldn't let him slide with his history, so the guy did, like, a Mario double jump over the
judge's bench and just
started feeding her shots.
Yeah. And hey, you have a history of violence, so we can't let you out of here because, you know, you might be violent. So he does a violence.
But we all know a player like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, definitely.
Like, I saw that and I was like, oh shit, I know that guy.
Yeah. Of course I know him. He's me.
Yeah. No, there have been a couple of games where I've just been like, cool, I'm going to go all by myself onto this pirate ship and try and sneak in. It did not end well.
No, no, it never does.
No, nor should it have. but yeah, like trying to account for a couple of the standard reactions of your player group. Like, you don't necessarily have to know your player group to be able to come up with, like, what do I do if somebody, like, tries to pickpocket a guy?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because there's always somebody who's trying to pickpocket those people.
Mm-hmm.
How do I deal with unruly behavior in a situation where ruly behavior is what we need?
Yeah. No, I totally feel you on that. Everyone's got a Zach. So
everyone's got a Zach.
You know, not that Zach's a bad guy, but Zach is just going to do Zach-like things. And, trying to figure out how to manage the murder hobo out of him as much as you can is one of life's real challenges.
Not even necessarily manage it as much as just like, you got to account for it.
Yeah.
Right. You know it's coming. And so you gotta make some adjustments to your expectations of your scenes.
Yeah.
To handle that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so when Zach does murder hobo his way out of this.
Right. Because he will. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah, you know, just getting back to the idea of like, I really try to spend at least 10 minutes in the headspace of the major NPCs and, you know, come up with a real broad spectrum personality for them and their reactions, you know, whether it's something that's already been printed, I can get a good idea of what that's at, or, you know, it's just me kind of inventing an interesting character, yeah. But making them, you know, a real character, not just like another trope. I deal in too many tropes already.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you can deal in too many tropes. I definitely deal in a few too many cliches.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, like, in addition to that, for me, I feel like when I'm coming up with a scene, establishing the reason for why the scene has to happen.
Yeah.
Like, not just logically within the game, right? Like, not just the internal consistency of that scene, like, follows from a previous one, but, like, narratively, why does that scene exist?
Right.
Is important for me. So like one of the things that I'll try and like sit down and really think about is like, is this scene going to advance the story? Are things going to happen that are going to need reactions from the players that are going to make the story more interesting, raise the stakes?
Yeah.
Increase the tension.
Yeah.
Is it going to do something that like pushes the characters forward?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is it going to like force characters to have character moments as much as every player that I play with hates doing those?
Yep.
But like having those role playing moments where you're like engaged in an actual conversation with somebody.
Sure.
About things that are happening with your characters.
Yeah.
And talking about the shit that's important with them and like actually getting to be dramatic and stuff. Or like, I feel like there needs to be room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
As well, right? Like you got those moments in the dungeon where it's just a room that has nothing in it.
Yeah.
Right. There's some scraps of fabric on the floor, so you know that there's no like gelatinous cube coming up.
Yeah.
It's got doors on all of the entries, and it's just a safe place for you to camp for a minute.
Yep.
Right. Having something like that in a non-dungeon campaign is also really important. And, like having room to breathe, give people a chance to like talk amongst themselves. Get a short rest in and like just kind of calm down, because like every plot needs to have like moments of tension release, otherwise it just becomes unrelenting. You can't be Cambria song.
Yep. Yeah, and just as a side note, like please, when you're building your own custom content, remember to put those, you know, empty rooms in your dungeon, like in the metaphorical dungeon of the mind, make sure there's an empty room, you know, because
people like, need that release.
They need a break sometimes.
Yeah. So that's scenes, I guess, like in kind of the Barriss sense.
Yeah.
Like that's the things that are happening, the events that occur.
Mm-hmm.
Where is all that happening?
Yeah. Now, in a lot of general terms, this stuff is going to be established, you know, way, way beforehand. Mm-hmm. But you do need to think about your setting and not just like the overall setting, the campaign theme or whatever, but, mm-hmm. you know, the particular place you are at that day.
Yep.
Like you said, the you know, from our notes here, you had this first the weather kind of thing. Settings happen from the outside in. Mood comes from important establishing information. So if you want there to be a dreary, overcast mood to the evening's proceedings, then maybe you should make sure that you tell them that it is dreary and overcast.
Well, and I feel like the impetus, the the instinct that a lot of DMs have, and I do this too, and this is like starting with the hook, mm-hmm. right, is you don't necessarily establish where things are happening
yeah.
right away, but taking a moment and like zooming out and getting an establishing shot, right, like describe the weather, describe the like larger scene that's happening, show the school before you zoom in on the students, right, mm-hmm. like just kind of like going from that like outside in concept of the space that you're working in can really help put your characters and your players like into that scene and understand everything that's going on both like a larger mood central mm-hmm. idea as well as like exactly what's happening in the immediate.
Yeah, no, actually something that this is just kind of I was re-listening to some older play sessions from a online group, but there was an idea that I hadn't explored as much as I want to going forward, but the idea of cut scenes to establish mm-hmm. the mood and the setting for the evening. Your characters are part of a bigger world. Show something that's plot relevant that's happening in the larger world. To let let the players know that the world is turning without them, and you know, it helps establish mood, it helps establish stakes, it helps establish time constraints. You know, if they're trying to get something mm-hmm. done and there's mm-hmm. other actors in the world that are actively, you know, working it in the contrary interest, then hey, reminding them that they're out there and doing these things is really important.
Well, and there's literally nothing stopping you from saying this is what you don't see.
Yeah.
Right? Like just describing the stuff that's happening somewhere else. Describing the stuff that's happening in the scene that you didn't notice because you're busy with your own shit.
Yeah.
Right? Like talking about like the person in the alley with the knife under their cloak mm-hmm. while you're across the street having a conversation with like a peach vendor or whatever. Right? You have that opportunity to start setting some stakes in that scene and setting the mood with like what is happening outside of the player character's direct experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if your characters are hunting Jack the Ripper, maybe once in a while you tell them about one of his attacks. Or they get mm-hmm. to see, not see, but, you know, be party to an attack. And you know, learn what that really means.
One of my favorite stupid DM tricks that I pulled once
mm-hmm.
Is I had everybody make two characters.
Okay.
And the second set of characters were the first set of characters' antagonists.
Ooh, I like and that. So
every once in a while, we would do this cutscene. We would smash away to a different place where these people have exactly the opposite goals of the main cast. So they are actively working on doing that. And so they start to get invested in both sides.
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily want, like, you want them to try as hard as they can as the antagonists. So it is something that you have to do with a group that's fairly well established and understands, like, storytelling and, like, the separation for metagaming and that sort of thing.
Sure.
But once you have that, it is so, so powerful for, like, understanding what your antagonist's motivations are and, like, getting into those scenes and getting to, like, have that moment where like a young lordling yells at a subordinate for a thing that the players did last week, right? So like those kinds of interactions can be a lot of fun with the right groups.
Definitely. I was going to say they're kind of similar idea, but there was a campaign I played in years ago when I was just in my D&D infancy. But what the DM did was so we, as an adventuring party, five members, we called ourselves the Hand. Great. At some point, we acquired some miscellaneous thugs who became the Foot.
okay, both Daredevil and the Ninja Turtles are going to be banging on your door. Right.
Listen, and I am going to take full credit for this because I did improvise this on the spot. When they asked, why are you calling us the Foot? I said, because you kick ass. And... you know, inspire my little dumb minions, but it was something that he then used in those sort of not full cutscene moments, like, because he hadn't really embraced that idea yet, but he definitely was like, hey, we should, you should be able to send the foot on, you know, a specific little runabout task. Like, they weren't high-level guys, but they could do little things for you, and then we would get follow-ups, and they would relay messages and things like that, but they just helped to establish that they were, we were living in a bigger world than just, hey, we are the be-all and end-all of everything important going on.
See, it would have been so fun to like, send you guys on little missions as the foot.
You know what? And I think that may have been a goal for the future before the group, unfortunately, went on indefinite hiatus due to work schedules. But
it's coming back any day now.
Yeah, one day, Lord willing. It's only been 15 years, and I'm not sure if Keith still lives in Fort Saskatchewan. Keith Foyston, if you're out there, I still want to continue playing Vayne. He was a great Goliath.
But like, have you ever done a campaign like that where like you have minions and you then get to play as the minions occasionally?
I don't think I have, actually. I would love to, but I, because I just love opportunities to play lots of weirdo characters, because I have lots of weirdo ideas. But no, I don't think I've ever played in a campaign that was just like, here's a there's a second group.
There's a couple of systems that I've played that actually like make that a feature.
Oh.
I think Pendragon was one of them, where like you have your main cast of like the Knights of the Round Table.
Okay.
And then you have like a crew of like squires and minions.
Okay.
And you send them out on like the little stuff, and then every once in a while the knights get together for like a big adventure.
I see.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, that,
that's where I
I think I've only ever played Pen 15 Dragon, so.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Classic. All right. Characters. Yes. I think we've only got a few minutes left,
yeah,
but I do want to touch on like how we plan for characters.
Yes.
In our sessions. Do you come up with a lot of new NPCs during your planning phase, or do you stat out the people that you met last session?
That's a good question. So here's what I'll say. My players don't tend to meet unexpected NPCs. So that a lot of that work, my major NPCs have been established in my like campaign prep phase. So yeah, they're not, I'm not like, oh boy, I got to figure out who, you know, Glibglorb the goblin is, because they were just so, you know, enamored with the idea of capturing a random goblin.
I don't know how you keep your players doing that, but God damn it, it happens all the time.
It's just a disease that goes around.
Oh, there's so many Glibglorbs.
Humans will pair bond with anything. It's
anything.
So, what I'm tending to do is I've got my roster of major NPCs for the world that provide major functions, and then honestly, I've got a backlog of just like El Generico guys that fill a specific role, like literal NPCs. And that's in my like custom stuff. Obviously, if I'm working off like a pre-gen setting, then I've gone and read through all of their major stuff, and I kind of know all the characters there and where things are. And then I'm literally just improvising, you know, Ted the barman every time.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, you know, if I anticipate that they're going to be going somewhere with one of the major NPCs, then great. I remind myself what they were tasked with and what they might be interested in. But other than that, it's a lot of improv when it comes to NPCs for me.
See, yeah, I'm very much a, like, once I've got my basis, my foundation set up, I'm very seat of the pants.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, the events that are happening in the game, and I'm willing to roll with whatever the players are going to throw at me. And so a lot of my players do meet a lot of unplanned NPCs.
I see.
Like, they will come across a like group of students in like the common room of a like university.
Okay.
And then they'll latch on to like one guy, and I'll be like, cool, well, I guess that guy's gonna get like a write up and like might become important again later because the players liked him.
Right.
And that's one of the ways that I make it seem like I know what I'm doing and I'm foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Is that like they do a thing and then I plan that thing to come back way later. And then it seemed like I had it planned the whole time when I absolutely did not.
No, for sure. You're a fraud.
I made up on the spot. I know nothing when I go into these sessions and I just make shit up. And then eventually it looks like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, no, I avoid that by just not allowing my players to experience unique interactions and human emotion.
Okay, yeah, that's a valid approach to it.
Yeah, they're playing a tabletop side-scroller, so...
You know what, that like leads into like problems with my writing. Right, where like I had one character in one of my novels fall in love for no reason that I could discern with like the cabin boy on an airship who I had not planned to be a character at all, and he was just a cardboard cutout. Like he had no personality at all, but for some reason my like the character that I was writing as I was writing them decided that she had feelings for him. It's like that shit happens all the time when I'm writing and then it leaks into my games. So
remember how I said earlier that we weren't fighting yet?